Welcome to the first Hirschfeld Century podcast of 2025.
That's true.
I'm Catherine Eastman of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm David Leopold, creative director of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And we are here for our first podcast episode of the year, and we're going back in time 50 years.
We thought we'd start in a new year by going to a past year.
Get out your calculator.
You don't need a calculator. You need a calendar.
Well, when I don't know how long ago something was, I get out my calculator and I type in the current year, and then I minus the number of years for going back, and then I have that year.
Friends, this is what I work with.
Some people do it. Everybody does it differently.
Yes, everybody
does.
You know,
to do that with a calendar would take a long time. Before we go any further, though, this episode, not only is it our first episode of 2025, it is the first episode where we're going to have a video companion to this episode. You're not going to see me and David because you don't need to see that, but you will see the drawings and images that we're talking about as we're talking about them. You know, usually you have to go to the show notes and click on the individual drawings, which you can still do, but if you don't want to do all that work, go to the YouTube link, which will be in the show notes, and you can just play this nice long video. You'll hear us talking. The podcast will be the full episode, but at the same time, you'll get a video component where you can see the drawings at the same time. And we're really excited for it to be easy for you and see the drawings.
And this is the work of Doug Coons, our producer.
Our media director is putting it together, and it's going to be great.
And if it's not, you know who to write to.
So enjoy that. Enjoy that little added bonus. And hopefully we'll start doing this going forward for each episode.
Now let's get on with it.
All right.
But we are going to, you know, put on your caps where you're going back 50 years.
All right.
For a special episode dedicated to the year 1975.
Correct.
And it turns out to be a much more interesting year than you might think.
Yes. When we first brought it up, I was like, 1975, there's nothing big that happens. But actually, there are a few big things that just we don't think of the date a lot, I feel like.
Right.
That do happen. So it is.
Well,
it is
I want to start off talking about something that didn't happen. It may be the biggest story of the year for Al Hirschfeld is what doesn't happen. And that is, he does the fewest number of drawings for the New York Times since 1928. He only does 13 drawings for the paper. He has a handshake agreement to do at least 26 drawings. Mm. And he's been doing that for decades at this point. And almost always they went over. So he wasn't sick. Dolly wasn't sick. Nina wasn't sick. There was no natural catastrophe that would keep him from doing drawings. This is a period of time when the New York Times was, they were considering retiring Hirschfeld. Mm. Whether it was an art director who decided he wanted to have the section look different, the arts and leisure section, or he was 72 years old. He'd been working for the paper for almost 50 years.
Wow.
And it wouldn't be unusual to think this guy may be aging out of the role.
Right.
And indeed, if you look for New York, in the New York Times for theater drawings in the calendar year 1975, you are not going to see many. The very first one of the year is actually for a show that had opened a month earlier.
Mm.
Totally unusual, as Hirschfeld's drawings, as you know, almost always appeared the Sunday before a show opened. So to have a drawing, and the show is called All Over Town, as he puts it in his handwritten caption, one of the nuttiest dishes on Broadway is Murray Siskel's comedy All Over Town, in which the cast of Zanies includes, and it had Pamela Peyton Wright and Cleveland Little, Bernard Hughes. I mean, It was just a classic theater drawing by Hirschfeld, a cast drawing, but it doesn't appear until a month after the show opens. Hmm. And his next drawing doesn't appear for another 3 months. And this one is for The Constant Wife with Ingrid Bergman. And that drawing does not appear until the show has been open for 2 weeks.
Hmm, interesting. Do you think he drew these before they opened and they just didn't publish them until after? Or do you think he just didn't get an assignment until after?
I think he got the assignment and they didn't run them.
They just sat on the drawings.
They sat on the drawings.
Interesting.
And I think they probably had some feeling like, well, we asked them to do it. We're going to have to pay them, so let's run the drawings.
Gotcha.
Conjecture.
Right.
Conjecture. I don't know for sure. But after this drawing of the Constant Wife with Ingrid Bergman at the end of April, the next drawing he does is actually for the first show of the 75-76 season, which is Chicago, on June 8th. And these drawings are also not the top of the fold. Chicago's on the front page of the Arts and Leisure section, but it's below the fold, and it doesn't take six of the eight columns or anything like that.
Yeah.
In fact, almost none of his drawings in this year are those all across the top of the fold.
Interesting. And that's very unusual.
Very unusual.
Because they are normally the first thing you see when you get to the arts. If there's a Hirschfeld in the Arts and Leisure section, you usually see it right away.
If you looked at his work from 1928 to 1970 through 1974, more times he's at the top of the fold than any other place.
Absolutely.
But his drawings did appear in other places.
Yes, yes.
But now it's almost as if they're denying him that space. It does happen when he draws the Broadway transfer of A Chorus Line in July of 1975. Whether he does the drawing as a big long chorus line to get that space, I'm not sure.
I was like, that drawing wouldn't make sense anywhere else, really.
Right. It's exactly right. Yeah. And then there is a drawing in September which has a number of the playwrights whose works were going to appear on Broadway, and that is a long drawing, and it's sort of old versus new. On one side is Richard Rodgers, Leonard Bernstein, Stephen Sondheim, Isaac Singer, and on the right hand side is Joe Papp and all the playwrights that he presents. And these are the only two drawings that cover the top of the fold.
Oh wow, the whole year.
So we don't know exactly why. There's nothing in our archives that tell us this.
Right.
I just know anecdotally people talked about a time that Hirschfeld was not fired by the New York Times, but definitely sort of put out to pasture.
Mm.
And I know that he didn't do anything himself to insist upon being back, but readers did.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They started writing in and asking where are the Hirschfelds.
I'm sure.
To the point where, and I'm sure producers wrote in. By the end of 1975, he's a little bit back on his normal pace.
Gotcha. Interesting.
And I mean, but we don't get a drawing of the Wiz, for instance,
right,
because of this.
Right.
We don't get a drawing of the Rocky Horror Show.
Mm.
Or Bette Midler's Clams on the Half Shell, all done in between January and March 1975, and he's not doing any drawings.
Interesting.
All three of those are shows that I would think he would draw.
Hmm.
I mean, Edward Albee's Seascape, maybe not. He wouldn't draw that. There's the play The Ritz that he doesn't draw when it's on Broadway, but he does draw when it's made into a film the following year. So it's a fascinating time because we think of Hirschfeld as this sort of uninterrupted line for 75 years in the New York Times. And, okay, it was pretty uninterrupted.
Yes, I would. Yeah, it is interrupted, but there is this year where it's spotty.
Yeah. I mean, the only other year that you'll see less theater drawings, I guess, overall is 1947. But even then, there are more drawings that year than there are in 1947 because he's traveling around the world with S.J. Perlman. But he still manages to get more drawings
than
1975.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah. But why we lead off with that is because, so what else was he doing?
Right.
You know, that, and it turns out what else he was doing, I don't know, seems pretty interesting to me.
All right. So what else was he doing in 1975?
Well, of course, there's films. You know, he's still doing film work. He draws Funny Lady, Barbra Streisand and Funny Lady. This is the sequel to Funny Girl, 7 years after that film. He draws it for film publicity, but it's a weird thing. We have not one, not two, but three different versions of this drawing in our archive. The drawing that I think he does originally is of Barbra Streisand, arm extended with this boa around her arm. And James Caan and Omar Sharif with their heads poking out from a curtain right next to her.
Right.
Then the next image we have in our archive, it's the same image except Omar Sharif has disappeared.
It's Omar Sharif erasure. It's not fair. I won't stand for it.
Stalinesque.
Yeah. I won't stand for it.
And then in the late 80s, one of his print publishers decides to do a print of Funny Lady. They have him redraw it almost exactly the way that he did, but of course, it being Hirschfeld, it is not the exact same.
No, no, no. If you look closely, it's different.
Yeah, I'm not even so sure it's you have to look that closely.
Yeah.
Curtains move. Yeah. The curtains move, the dress
is different, but it is essentially the same image of Barbra Streisand.
Except no co-stars are present.
Yes, no Omar Sharif or James Caan.
Yeah.
No, those are gone.
So that is Caan erasure.
Yeah. and like you said, that's a limited edition print.
Yeah, that
is a very nice one. Yeah, very nice one.
Then one of the other films he draws, Sunshine Boys.
Oh, you can see this one on Amazon Prime.
You can. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it.
Yeah, I've actually never watched it, but I always see the cover, the poster of it.
Yeah.
But my point is that's the poster is on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
Promoting the video.
Yes, that is it became the poster for the film. There were black and white drawings that were also used in publicity, but it was the poster of Walter Matthau and George Burns. Mm-hmm. That is really the powerful image. It's a Neil Simon. You know, he had drawn the stage production in 1972.
Right.
And not surprisingly, they asked him to draw the film adaptation. And then he does another Neil Simon film adaptation, which is Prisoner of Second Avenue.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Originally with Lee Remick and, or Lee Grant.
Lee Grant and Peter
Falk. And the film version is Jack Lemmon and Anne Bancroft.
Mm.
And what's so amazing is you see both of these couples in the apartment, which is, you know, where they're the prisoner, essentially.
Mm.
And the Peter Falk version, it's very Peter Falk-like.
You know, we were talking about this morning.
It's
very, not dark, but just a little bit more mopey, a little bit less frantic than the Jack Lemmon one, which makes sense because we were talking. Peter, I can't imagine Peter Falk being like frantic about something.
Right.
You know, he's always kind of cool and collected, even if he's a prisoner of Second Ave.
Well, you really sense the frustration
and
the resignation to the situation.
Yeah.
Whereas in the film drawing, I mean, Jack Lemmon pretty much jumps off.
He's crawling out of his skin. Yeah.
Yeah. You can see this guy. It's really been tough on him. And he's really unspooling in front
of
us.
It is interesting, though, to see the same story in a very simpler composition as well. It's just the two of them in the apartment. You know, it's kind of not the same scene, but you can tell they're related.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Very but they're very different. Yeah. Very different.
So those are the only three films that he draws this year. And there may be more. I don't think there are, but there may be. We don't know what they are. TV. It's a good TV year. He does three TV guide covers.
Oh, classic.
Chico and the Man, Rhoda, and Howard Cosell.
Howard Cosell. Sorry.
I mean, do you even know who Howard Cosell is?
No, I don't.
He was the sportscaster.
Oh, he's a sports guy.
Oh, my God. Monday Night Football.
Oh, okay.
He was the most pompous person.
Oh, really?
You could imagine. You know, he spoke, you know, he was a blowhard. He knew what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, he always came off like, I know more than you.
That's so funny because the drawing is so jovial. I always thought he was a comedian.
He really was.
Yeah.
He was making jokes.
He's smiling and he's got this nice, his eyes are soft. He's got a big smile. I always thought he was kind of funny.
He is all those things, but he was also pretty ruthless and tough.
Interesting.
I was just reading a story about the, you know, in 1972 at the Olympics, the terrorists come and kill the Israeli athletes. Well, ABC puts Jim McKay as the point person in that. And they put Cosell on. Cosell pretends he is some equipment salesperson to sneak into the Olympic Village.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's reporting from there, but he feels like he's in the middle of nowhere. He wants to be in the main business. And Rune Arledge doesn't let him. And because he knew that if Howard Cosell got in there, it would be about Howard Cosell. This was not appropriate in this
instance. He couldn't handle the situation.
But in 1975, when this drawing was done, Howard Cosell was definitely at the height of his powers.
Gotcha.
And his voice was so distinctive that everybody knew it. I mean, it was just one of those things. Everybody knew who Howard Cosell was.
Gotcha. I believe you. And the Rhoda and Chico, or Chico and the Man, those are underrepresented TV Guide covers. Just because nobody, you never, oh, I'm doing a Rhoda rewatch. Yeah. You know, you never, no one's doing a Chico and the Man rewatch. So I feel like those TV Guides slip under the radar a lot.
Without a doubt. Yeah. A lot but of they the are 70s great ones. Work.
They're very colorful. Yeah.
I mean, they're sitcoms.
You yeah, know, that's they were, true. They're very fleeting, I'm sure. Yeah. But yeah.
This was cotton candy on television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they get two great TV Guide covers by Hirschfeld.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely. But strangely enough, this is not the most TV work that he does in the year. For Masterpiece Theater in September of 1975, he does 14 different drawings of 14 different plays that they're going classic plays that they're going to present on Masterpiece Theater.
Right.
They have. Well, my favorite is Carl Brown and Mrs. Warren's Profession.
Right.
There's another one of Ralph Richardson and Thora Hurd and She Stoops to Conquer. You like...
Well, my favorite's Eric Porter in Macbeth.
Oh, yeah.
I've always liked that drawing.
Yeah.
I know it's very... He's got big, broad shoulders and it's very Macbeth drawing, obviously. Were these in the New York Times?
They were used, they did run the New York Times in one ad, full page ad,
okay,
and it had all these different drawings.
It reminds me of like the Film to Remember series. Was it like
very
that?
Very much
the IBM?
Like that.
Okay, yes. The IBM series, yeah, which is where it was a collection of things that were going to be presented on television, and you know, it's like Natalie Wood. And
but the drawings could also stand on their own.
Absolutely,
so when
when
they actually appeared,
yeah,
when they're promoting She Stoops to Conquer,
okay. they would just use that
drawing.
Gotcha.
So it was a great campaign.
Mm-hmm. That happened several times in the 70s, I guess.
Yeah.
So there are two IBM series, right?
Yes, 77 and 79.
Mm-hmm. And then there's this
this predates that.
Yeah. Interesting.
But again, I mean, I don't think it's because he has the time. He would have done these drawings if he was doing 13 more theater drawings.
Right.
He would have found time to do them. But it's keeping his work out in front of people.
Yeah.
If he's not in the Times as much as he was before, it isn't that people are seeing his work that much less.
Right.
You know. And the thing that really, I think, is the thing that keeps him afloat in 1975 is a fellow by the name of George Goodstead. Now, Hirschfeld, as you might remember, a few years earlier, resumes printmaking. After Harlem is seen by Hirschfeld and the sort of disaster that was, Hirschfeld really gives up printmaking for almost 30 years until George Goodstead invites him to come down to his Bank Street atelier and to experiment with master printmakers. Mm-hmm. Goodstead had been doing this with a number of artists, and because he understood that if you got these guys into printmaking, he would have prints to sell, they would have prints to sell. I mean, it worked for everybody.
Yeah. And did they know each other?
Not before this.
So he kind of just cold called him and said, I'm a printmaker.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how.
Okay.
Maybe they met through friends. I know that George was doing prints for Calder, whether that happened before or after he met Hirschfeld, I don't know, but Calder and Hirschfeld were friends.
Gotcha.
So if he's working with Calder, Calder might say, you should talk to Al. He would be
okay.
great.
Okay, interesting.
So they do the Rhythm Series in 1970. It comes out.
The Rhythm Series are dance pieces.
I don't know if we've
I think we've talked about them before, but they're not celebrities. They're not personalities. They're really just dancers.
And they're poses, they're really.
Beautiful, full color, you know, a lot of them. Really, really beautiful prints.
I think in a way it allows you to see the drawings better because you're not thinking, does it look like this person?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And you really see how he captures movement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a brilliant series.
They're very nice.
But here it is 5 years later, and that must have sold well enough that I'm sure Hirschfeld doesn't have anything he's working on. And George Goodstadt is really starting. He's closed the Bank Street Atelier, and he's opened a gallery in Westport, Connecticut, where he lives. And he probably figures, let's get Hirschfeld. And they do 10 different etchings. And they are some of, I mean, they're very iconic pieces now. Oh, yeah. Lucille Ball in the First Stole. Charlie Chaplin walking in clouds holding flowers. W.C. Fields. Jackie Gleason in that circle format.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Lon Hardy in the Oval. Buster Keaton in the Rowboat. Marilyn Monroe in Some Like It Hot. Mae West. I mean, some really great pieces. Yeah. And he's working. So with Marilyn Monroe in Some Like It Hot, he didn't have to redraw that. That was taken from the Some Like It Hot cast drawing.
Mm, sure.
But for many of these other pieces, the W.C. Fields, the Gleason, all those things, mm-hmm. those are new drawings.
Right.
And but they're not, he doesn't draw on board for these. He draws, I just saw one of these, and I'm pretty sure this is how it worked. He drew on pieces of Mylar. And those were given to a master printmaker, mm-hmm. Emiliano Cerini.
Right. He was an Italian printmaker.
Oh, yeah. But he was a near legendary figure mm-hmm. in printmaking right. in the 20th century. He pulled prints for Jackson Pollock, Robert Motherwell, Bill Gropper, Leonard Baskin, Raphael Sawyer, Jack Levine. I mean, he was sort of like the go-to guy.
And can you explain what that role entails? So Hirschfeld draws this new drawing of W.C. Fields. Okay. So Hirschfeld does this new drawing for W.C. Fields. What then, how does it become a print? And what does the printmaker, you know, Emilia Cerini, what does he do exactly?
Well, I know he's pulling the prints. How he makes the plates, whether that's photo, he does a sort of photo process, mm-hmm. which I'm pretty sure is what it was.
Okay.
And then he works the plate, you know, because the...
Explain to us what that means.
Okay, so you're dealing with these were etchings. There was a copper plate. And when you see an etching, you know it's an etching because it's like some plate has been pressed into a piece of paper.
Like
you'll see a box.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Or in the case of the Gershwins from 1990, right. the plate was made into the shape of a piano.
Right.
And so you have that. So that's why you know it's an etching. Mm-hmm. And so an etching is lines are etched into a plate. Usually you put a ground over the plate mm-hmm. and then you use a sharp implement to scrape into the ground.
Right. And so is that what Cerini would do?
Yes.
Okay.
So Cerini prepared the plate.
Mm-hmm.
He would then pull a print, and he would bring it to Hirschfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And Hirschfeld would say, a little bit more here mm-hmm. or a little bit less here, or let's try this.
Right.
You know, these prints are interesting because they have this sort of sepia background.
Yes.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
I think it really adds to what you're looking at. And why that and who made that decision, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the kind of conversation that Cerini and Hirschfeld would have.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would be a proofing process. And maybe he'd come back more than once
yeah.
to get it just right.
Right.
I'm sure in these first ones, there was a lot more talking about it.
And that's why sometimes, too, you might see prints come up that say printer's proof.
Yes.
They might be signed, they might be unsigned. But they would say printer's proof. And that just means this is a trial run.
The test proofs are ones that are what they're testing.
Okay.
The printer's proofs are now actually part of the printing process. Let's say you have an edition of 100 prints. So there's 100 prints, but we know there's going to be anywhere from 10 to 15 artist proofs.
Gotcha.
So now they're pulling 115 prints.
Right.
And this is from an edition of 100. Now we know there's 115. Mm-hmm. And there would usually be one, sometimes two printer proofs.
As like, this is the first one we're doing. Let's make sure it looks good.
No, this is part payment to the printmaker.
Ah.
He now has two printer's proofs that are unique to him.
Gotcha.
That have been signed by the artist.
Gotcha.
And Cerini kept a lot of these for most mm-hmm. of his career. It was only after his death.
Gotcha.
In, he died in 99, actually, that his family started selling some of those proofs. Mm. So in addition of 100, they've actually printed 117.
Right, right.
In addition to these classic prints that Hirschfeld did, he did another classic, although it's a little bit different, and it was a much bigger edition, although how big, I'm not exactly sure. It's a print called World Premiere.
Oh, yeah.
It shows Clark Gable, Marilyn Monroe, Ethel Barrymore, Humphrey Bogart, Judy Garland, mm-hmm. out in front of a group, you know, people in front of a theater.
Yeah.
And to me, it's classic Hirschfeld.
It is. It's like a heavy hitter's, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, Judy. Oh, Judy. Yeah, you see everybody. You know, everybody. There's, what, five people?
You're right. Exactly. Well, when, you know, I often talk about the Algonquin Round Table as mm-hmm. the image you see in the yes. Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, the Encyclopedia Britannica also has an entry on Hirschfeld.
Mm.
And in the mid-90s or early 90s, they contacted us. They wanted to put a piece of his work with his entry.
Yeah.
And I said, what piece do you want to use? They said, we'd like you to suggest a piece. Mm. So I thought about, what is one piece that would sum up Hirschfeld?
Or give you a good idea of what he's about.
I mean, you think about Hello, Dolly or mm-hmm. Fiddler on the Roof. But I thought, but will people know those people? And then I thought of this world premiere because those are all, many of those performers people know.
Yes.
And you get five different
people. I think that's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. God.
Don't worry, David. I approve. You can put that
30
in
30 years later, I can now release my breath.
No, that is a good one. It is it captures a lot about Hirschfeld.
Right.
What he wants to draw, the way he draws, the people he draws, you know, the industry.
At a theater.
Yeah,
you know,
works.
That's in, you know, is it a film theater? Is it a stage theater?
Yeah, well, there's Ethel Barrymore. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's the arts.
So, oh, good.
I'm
picked
glad.
The right piece. I'm so glad. He even does a self-portrait at this time.
Mm-hmm. Is this the sweater one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This is a great one.
Where he's wearing a turtleneck sweater.
Yeah.
And it's all these, you know, curly cues
knitted,
to make up the,
yeah.
If you've ever seen a turtleneck sweater mm-hmm. by Hirschfeld, and they are there. He's wearing one. And he did produce an actual print.
Yeah.
And he inscribed it, single print, no edition. But he did sign it, and he did title it Self-Portrait.
Self-Portrait.
But there's only one, you know. But he's not only, so he's opening up a whole new world to himself. I mean, I think most of the prints that people know of Hirschfeld come from this, starting with this period. You know, really, he returns to printmaking in, you know, 69, 70. But this is when he really starts doing printmaking.
Yes, and then consistently after this.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's in fact, no year until the end of his life that there aren't new prints coming in.
Mm.
Sometimes one or two, sometimes 10 or 12, depending on what his print publishers thought that the public wanted.
Mm.
But then he also does a series of book covers in 1975 that are equally iconic, and some of them actually get turned into prints.
Yeah, I think more so iconic, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 1969, a guy by the name of Richard A. Noble. Richard A. Noble puts out a book called Drat, being the encapsulated view of life by W.C. Fields in his own words. And the cover of that book is a fantastic Hirschfeld, where he puts a little piece of red paper on the nose to just accentuate, you know, W.C. Field's drunkenness. And
I didn't realize that. I thought it was just a clown nose.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh.
No.
My nose doesn't get red. My cheeks get red.
Okay. So if Hirschfeld drew you drunk,
I would have
rosy cheeks.
I would have rosy cheeks.
Well, so then he does another book in 1970 that you may have heard of called Why a Duck.
Mm. No, Why a Duck.
I am not taking the bait, folks. Anyway, this was the first time that someone had taken, literally he goes frame by frame in the films. He thought he would just write about the humor.
A noble.
Yeah. Thought he would just sort of capture the humor. He watches the movie and takes the funny lines. Mm. But then he realizes he's really taken, you know, you got to have one with the other.
Yeah.
And so he does literally almost frame by frame breakdowns where you have the dialogue running underneath it.
Wow.
Probably, I don't remember now. There's people who are listening who will probably tell me I know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think they do the sort of love scenes and things like that because that wasn't the Marx
Brothers.
Boring.
You know. Cut that out. Yeah.
But The Wyatt Duck book is a crucial book for many Marx Brothers fans.
It's a gateway.
Oh.
Into Hirschfeld for sure. There are people who it's the Aerosmith or the My Fair Lady, but if you're a film part, like if you're a, you know, comedy or a film person, it's the Richard and Noble books.
Yes.
For sure. And especially Wyatt Duck.
Well, and as much as they are gateways for Hirschfeld, they're also, you know, in the age before videotapes.
Right.
If you wanted to watch these movies, first of all, you had to wait to either they were on TV or shown at a repertory theater.
Crazy.
But if you really wanted to study them, literally frame by frame, you didn't have a lot of opportunities.
Right.
This was it. And these books became like
Bibles.
Like holy, you know, important things. Mm-hmm. And he would go on to do a series of them. And, you know, Casablanca, Psycho, Stagecoach, Maltese Falcon. But these ones, when he does the comedians, they all have Hirschfeld covers.
Yeah.
And so in 1975, he does one of W.C. Fields again in the barbershop. You see Fields sort of swatting away a dog.
Mm.
You know, there is and that was for Godfrey Daniels. That was what the book was called. There was another book on Law and Hardy called A Fine Mess.
That's a classic.
With Oliver Hardy blowing through Stan Laurel's ear, which was, he was essentially copying himself because in 1934, for Swiss Miss, that is a whole part of the campaign. He does
that
in color as well as in collage. Mm-hmm. We have examples of both of them. And this one that he does for this cover gets published as a limited edition print. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Yeah. And then Hooray for Captain Spaulding.
Oh, nice.
Which is the Marx Brothers and Animal Crackers. Mm-hmm. And the image on that cover with the potted plant becomes
that does
Marx Brothers etching, the Animal Crackers etching.
Yeah.
So those covers turned out to have a life long, you know, far outlasting their actual books. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody looks at the books. Those books are bought today for their covers more than anything else.
Sure, probably, yeah.
And then, you know, there's a lot of unusual things he does here. He does the Charlie Award. Do you know what the Charlie Award is?
Does anyone know what the Charlie Award is?
You are speaking to one of those people.
Dare I say, you don't have a lot of information on the Charlie Award.
That's because there's not a lot of information on the Charlie Award.
Tell us about the Charlie Award.
A handful of people who know anything about the Charlie Award.
Tell us about the Charlie.
Well, in 1975, Alan King tried to sort of help legitimize comedy by coming up with the American Academy of Comedy.
Mm.
And he convinces ABC that they're going to give out awards, you know, for the best comedy stuff of the year.
Okay.
And for 2 years, they have an awards program on ABC. And what do you win if you win a Charlie Award, which I can only assume was named for Charlie Chaplin?
I was just going to ask that. That was my assumption as well, but I didn't know.
I mean, strangely enough, the American Humor Studies Association, there really is one, they now give out a Charlie Award.
Oh, really?
And it is named for Charlie Chaplin.
Have you told them, fellas, we've been here before and it didn't work out?
I think it's funny, so it totally fits in.
Yeah, that's true. So what do you win?
You win a bronze adaptation of a Hirschfeld drawing.
Gotcha.
Now, it is not of Charlie Chaplin.
Mm.
It is not of the Marx Brothers,
the
Ritz Brothers.
That would be way cooler. Like to have an Oscar, but it's Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
That would be way cooler.
I think it's like they should have a banking award called the Chico.
Yeah. No, I don't know if you want to give a banking award and call it Chico.
That's the whole point.
I think that would be bad.
Yeah.
No, you guys are going to be disappointed when you hear what the Charlie Award is. It would be better if it was a bronze of Charlie Chaplin.
It is a hand with one finger up, and there is an egg on top of that finger. If you know what that is referring to, what the joke is on that, will you please write us at info@alhertzfeldfoundation.org?
Because we don't know.
We do not
know. Yeah, I can't think of a Chaplin thing where he balances an egg or anything like that.
Or no, kind of I don't famous think it's that. Joke. There's a joke there, yeah. Obviously.
Mm. Yeah, and let us know.
And strangely enough, we have the drawing that was right. used as the basis
So Hirschfeld for the did award. A drawing of a hand and a finger pointing with an egg on top of it.
Yeah.
And then someone interpreted this just like his drawings in Bali. Where
sure.
he made sculptures, or sure. he didn't make sculptures. Locals
True.
Made
True.
A sculpture of his drawings. They did a bronze of this drawing.
Right.
A 3D.
It's... And you can find, you know, we'll put a picture of it in the show notes. Mm. But it is, I mean, it's great. And it's signed.
We don't have one.
Oh, he did have one.
Oh, he did? Oh, is it at the library now?
We gave it to the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, along with all of his other awards.
Yeah.
Which
we should have kept a Tony.
Several keys to different cities.
Oh, we should have kept those.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony Awards.
If I was here, then I'd be like, nope, we want to keep this, and we want to keep this. We're keeping a Tony.
Actually, when we gave that material to the library, you had just come on board.
And you didn't consult me.
Correct. The newbie in for 2 months. Let's get her opinion.
Yeah, the Tony, I feel like, because there were at least two, correct?
Yes, but they were not, they weren't Tony Awards like.
They were the Lifetime Achievement Awards.
They were more like scrolls.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, he gets decrees. Two Lifetime Achievement Awards yeah. that nobody else ever gets.
Oh, really? That's funny.
He gets the Brooks Atkinson Award.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Totally appropriate.
And in 84, they sort of give him another Lifetime Achievement, but they don't. They just turned the whole show into a Hirschfeld gallery of images.
Right, right.
But
that
they
was
don't
cool.
actually
right.
give him an award.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you see him come up. We have video where,
it's
you know,
a very sweet video.
I think Mary Tyler Moore introduces him. Aww. And he comes up and says a few words and leaves, and no award is exchanged. So, he didn't have that award. But he had medallions. He had all kinds of things.
He had a Presidential Medal of Freedom.
No, but, not the Medal of Freedom. Oh, he'd gotten Medal of the Arts. And yes, we did have that. When we did the exhibition at the Performing Arts Library, New York Public mm-hmm. Library for Performing Arts at Lincoln Center in 2013, we had a whole display yeah. of his awards.
That makes sense. That's where we donated them.
But there was a Charlie Award among those.
Okay, so the New York Public Library has a Charlie Award.
Yes.
Okay, one of the only... Charlie Awards.
Hirschfeld does much to Kitty Carlisle.
We forgot to mention the Charlie Awards were hosted by Steve Allen. How exciting. You yeah. thought we were going to go this whole episode without referencing someone from What's My Line. You are mistaken, sir.
I tried, folks. I tried very hard. We were almost done.
And not speaking of What's My Line, but speaking of To Tell the Truth,
Kitty Carlisle Hart.
You were going to talk about yes. Kitty Carlisle Hart next.
So Kitty Carlisle Hart is in The Lion King talking about her drawing. Now, she's not talking about this drawing.
Mm.
She is talking about a drawing that he did of her in 1983 when she was in the revival of On Your Toes.
Yeah, that's the best. That's
and
the
she claims that she didn't like the drawing.
What? That's a great drawing of her.
It's perfect.
It's a beautiful drawing. Okay.
And she had it hanging in her house. And she saw it every day.
But it was no good.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, she didn't say it was bad. Mm-hmm. She just was like, oh, to see yourself. And oh, you know.
It looks just like her.
Yeah,
it looks just
like
her. It's very beautiful.
And the drawing he does as for the USO Woman of the Year, Kitty Carlisle Hart, 1975, was the USO Woman of the Year. He does another great head and shoulders portrait of her.
Yeah.
With her smile being central,
yep.
and it looks just like her.
Yeah, there she has a few lovely drawings.
And this year, he really touches all the bases. S.J. Perlman starts a new series called Eastward Ha, where he's going through East Europe. Mm. And although Hirschfeld does not join him on those travels, he does the drawing for the.
These are some cool ones. Yeah, and you don't really see them.
A lot. And like, when they were collected into a book, they were not included.
Right. When Perlman's pieces were, the Perlman writings, the Hirschfeld drawings didn't appear. But there are some really cool ones. I like. There's one of a bear knitting.
Yes. Yes.
But these are really interesting.
Yeah,
and we don't have a lot of information on them.
Well, they were done for Travel and Leisure,
yeah,
which was a magazine at the time, and it was more or less a monthly feature, kind of like Westward Ha was and Swiss Family Perelman was. He took these monthly articles and turned it into a book.
Yeah, he went to Eastern Europe. So Hirschfeld also traveled in 1975, though.
Yeah, I was just getting to this. One night, Hirschfeld, for some reason, had not been to Sardis for 2 years. For someone like Hirschfeld, who had been going to Sardis for decades.
I see. He liked Sardis.
Yes, it was the theater watering hole.
Right.
The theater hangout.
Okay.
Vincent Sardi lived on his block.
Oh, interesting.
You know, but for whatever reason... Yeah, in a newspaper article, he talks about he hadn't been in Sardis for 2 years, and he goes there one night to have dinner with Harold Rome, the composer, who was a good friend of his. And they're at the table. Rome sees a friend of his who is a Newsweek reporter who comes over, and they start talking. And Rome had just been to Japan, and he had been invited by this group, and all these wonderful things happen, and they're talking about it. And the Newsweek reporter says to Hirschfeld, well, would you go? And Hirschfeld says, yes, I would go if they paid for everything and sent a car for me and I could do whatever I wanted. I mean, he comes down with this whole long list, like they're never going to do this. Yeah. And 2 weeks later, he gets a letter. The Newsweek reporter he obviously knows somebody in the Japan world, and this organization 2 weeks later sends Hirschfeld a letter saying, would you come to Japan if we give you, you know, we pay for all your expenses, you know, runs down the whole list.
Oh, wow.
So what was Hirschfeld going to do? Say
of course,
no,
yeah. You know? And Hirschfeld has always loved and been influenced by Japanese art.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, this is for him a sort of coming home.
Yeah.
Because he had... You know, he felt like he was almost more Japanese than the Japanese were, because I have a quote that says, I'm closer to Japanese art than most Japanese. Now, he would say this in 1977. Most of them are influenced by the New York school, while I have been influenced by Hokusai and Utamaro. Even at the time, when he arrived in Japan, of course, he was interviewed. This organization had set up press and things like, and he says, my work is greatly influenced by the Japanese woodblock printers, Shikuru and Utamaro, and who in turn were influenced by Kabuki. Now I'm here finally drawing the theatrical forms, which have been a great influences on my work. Because what they do is there's an exhibition of Hirschfeld's work, but they take him to all the great Kabuki theater. Mm. That is going on in Japan. And he does lots of drawings. He does lots of paintings. Not so much while he's there. Mm-hmm. He makes a lot of sketches. And then he comes home and he starts producing all these different drawings. Some of them are in the Hirschfeld Century.
Yep.
But primarily he focuses on 12 pieces of different Kabuki, not performers. You know, this isn't like looking at the Japanese Zero Mustel.
Right. Kabuki's more character-based, correct? Yes.
He does drawings of characters.
Right.
Of plays. Bunraku is a puppet theater.
Mm.
And he draws that as well.
Gotcha.
He uses these rich colors, you know. And because he's working with Goodstadt. Now, Goodstadt has sort of set the table of a print market for Hirschfeld's work. So he encourages Hirschfeld to produce these great, this is Hirschfeld's really great payback for all these Japanese woodcuts. Mm. You know, he does works that is very much influenced by that, is very similar to.
Yeah.
And the series of 12 comes out, and it's a hit.
Right, know? And this is the we call the Kabuki series of prints. Yeah, they're beautiful. And that must be 76, correct?
That is. They come out in 76.
Those come out the following year.
He goes in 75, but they come out in 76. Right. Okay. And then, strangely enough, in 76, Sondheim writes, and it premieres on Broadway, Pacific Overtures.
Right, yeah.
So he has this, and all those characters are sort of costumed and made up to look like kabuki performers.
Mm-hmm, right.
So for Hirschfeld, this was like, it was following him back home.
That's great,
almost.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of that may have happened if he was sort of tied down to doing more theater work.
That's true. Maybe that's so where he found time. It's
so classic. In 1946, 47, Hirschfeld suffers his greatest artistic failure, which is the Sweet By and By closing in Philadelphia. And it leads to one of his greatest successes, which is the bestseller Westward Ho. Mm-hmm. And here's another instance where the New York Times thinks they're going to retire him, and they just open up all these new avenues for Hirschfeld.
That's true.
And eventually they bring him back, full force within, but 4 months after 1975 is over, the Times starts a new section in the Friday paper called the Weekend Section, and the Friday Theater column starts.
Maybe they were trying to retire him to the Weekend column.
No, they weren't.
You think no?
Because that didn't exist.
Yeah.
You don't start taking less drawings from somebody.
You don't make a new project for someone you're going to get rid of. That's true. Okay, fine.
So in 1975, he does 13 drawings. Mm-hmm. In 1976, he does more than 50 drawings.
Oh, wow.
Because he's doing a drawing every week, and then he does the Sunday drawings as well. Now, the Friday Theater Comp doesn't start until April. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly the number, but it's around 50.
It's
drawings.
Much more than the 13
right.
he did the previous year. Yeah.
So instead of retiring him, he comes back stronger than ever.
Yeah.
Which is, that's Hirschfeld's story. Mm-hmm. You can't keep a good man down, I guess. That's right. What you would say.
Well, this was a great adventure going back to 1975, revisiting all things Hirschfeld in 1975.
I love time traveling with you.
Oh, thank you, David. Well, this was great.
At least I was alive in 1975.
That's true. I was not alive. Nope. Thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this little trip back in time again.
If you have questions, comments, compliments to me or Catherine, you can write to info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org.
Yes. And remember, for this episode too, there'll be a video companion on YouTube that will be in the show notes.
You won't see us, but you will see all the artwork mentioned.
No. You don't need to see us. It's for you to be able to listen to the podcast and have the images running at the same time, so you don't have to click anything.
Right.
And it's the first time we're doing this, so try it out. I think you'll like it. I like it, yeah. So also, you can reach us on Facebook, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Twitter, X, Instagram, @AlHirschfeld. YouTube, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. Basically, just type in Al Hirschfeld or Al Hirschfeld Foundation, and you will find us very easily.
We've talked about some prints that you can find at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation shop.org.
That's right. Yep.
And other things that you can find at HirschfeldHomestyle.com.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we talked about Peter Falk. It is our biggest selling pillow. Well, somebody just bought a little reproduction and a frame of it yesterday.
Yes,
I think we have sold a pillow or two of it, but several mugs. Peter Falk is our top selling drawing image on Hirschfeld Home Style. So make sure to check that out, TV Guide cover.
Thank you for listening, and we will see you when we do.
Bye-bye.